For June the 9th, 2023, we talk about Diablo 4, Amnesia Rebirth, Far World Pioneers, and much more. Welcome to Level 461. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismath.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Dennis, your name in our recording app is Pool Boy, so I'm going to throw it to you first on that, because that's intriguing.
Yeah. Well, little known fact, one of my first jobs was as a pool boy. Or rather, a person who went around and cleaned pools before they opened.
Okay.
But it's basically the same thing.
What's the alternative?
I think the alternative wears much less clothing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I've seen that movie.
Yeah. but it is officially summer. My kids are officially out of school. And the pools are open. So I've been going around doing all the summer things, including our first trip to the pool this season.
Mm.
Which is super fun.
Nice.
We loaded up on like the pool noodles, and man, nothing says summer like beating the shit out of your siblings with a pool noodle.
Oh yeah.
That is a time-honored tradition.
Not even close. They're just like scaring them if you get that real good whack at the water right next to them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think the acoustics are what makes it so satisfying.
Oh yeah.
Cause you can get that and still not really hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
If you get it nice and waterlogged, so it'll swing with some force and really just kind of just cut the air. Just,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pow! Yeah. It's so satisfying. Our pool has like a little playground that you can play on, during adult swim. And if you are wet, the slide on that playground goes about 60,000 miles per hour.
Oh, it's a rail gun. It'll launch you across, really launch you across the Bering Strait.
Space.
Yeah.
Yes. And so the game that my boys were super into was I stood at the bottom of the slide like a batter, and they launched themselves down at me, and I just took a cut. As they went past, and that was our fun. So summer is excellent.
All strengths or any hits?
You know, I tried to keep them conscious at least. So yeah. if I saw that they were getting a little loopy from the battering, I would lay off.
Jeez, man.
Well, recording.
The danger is like, other kids were like watching us playing on the playground, and we're like, oh, I want to go. And it's like, I don't know if I can play with you this way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a good times had by all. Yeah. Summer fun, going hard. We have been like out of the house all around, since school let out. So good times.
Nice.
We'll see if I crash and burn, or if they crash and burn from the pace, or what. But summer's been good.
Someone's gonna crash and burn.
Someone's gonna crash.
So someone, yours got to crash and burn. Yeah. It's it's one of those things where you got to get out and do it as much as you can before it gets too hot. Like the corridor from mid July to like I would say the end of August for me gets between the heat and the bugs. It ends up being a little bit too much, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm seeing that with what I'm doing. I've been out doing a lot of trail walking, kind of stuff, trail walking, hike kind of things. Like went up to like, nearby a state park and did, David, I went and hiked at Mohican for the first time.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like went up by the waterfalls there and all of that. And
yeah. Lion Falls, right?
Yeah. Lion's Falls. Yeah. So just, you know, just went a mile down the river and then did like, you know, 2.5 miles back. It was good. A lot more elevation gain than I thought there was going to be. More than I could, because I walked to the end of the easy trail and I was like, oh, well, I'll take the hard trail back. No. probably should have looked that up on an app of some kind.
Yeah, I, I still remember that trail. That trail is that trail was challenging when I was like a 12-year-old with, you know, the infinite energy cheat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You did the equivalent, the hiking equivalent of switching from beer to liquor.
I did, yeah. But it was neat, you know. It was good. Went out to a wetlands trail, like on Sunday. New one that opened up out here, kind of a next town over kind of deal. And
a boardwalk, mayhap.
No boardwalk. There is like a weird bridge to nowhere in the middle of it.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. But like, got back by the creek, like way back at the far end, about a mile in. And there were these two like middle schoolers, and they made this kind of big show of hiding these little nets behind their back. They were there, and I said, "Hey, don't worry. I'm not a cop, whatever you're trying to hide." And then they said, "Oh, well, do you want to see our crayfish?" Like, yeah, I want to see those. Like, I'm going to say no to crayfish, dude. They had a little bucket. They were catching crayfish. Uh-huh. It was full of them. They were doing a good job.
It's the most wholesome story I've heard in a long, long time.
I looked at them and I said, good work. And then I left.
Yeah. You said, you've reached the joke's point. On you. I'm actually the crayfish inspector.
Yeah. Those are now my
I'm
crayfish.
A game warden.
Yeah.
So did I ever tell you my story with that, with crayfish?
No, no.
So I was doing hurricane relief with some people after Katrina. And this guy drives up. You know, local guy looks at his window, says, "Y'all Northerners ever had crawdads?"
Okay.
And proceeds to go to the local grocery store, the like local 7-Eleven, because apparently that's where you get crawdads in Louisiana. Uh-huh. Buy a huge thing of like boiled crawdads and like bring them back.
Nice. That's nice. Good hospitality. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was just. Y'all Northerners ever tried crawdads?
No, but I reckon you're about to fix that.
Yep.
Yeah.
You ever look at a group of people and be like, they need some crawdads.
Yeah.
It's like, what was the vibe you gave off that caused him to conclude that?
Yeah. I think Yankee.
Yeah. Mm.
It was your carpet bags.
Yes. Exactly.
So yeah, that's been my that's been my fun. How about you, Ben?
That's really cool.
So I got to hang out with people from originally from Cincinnati over the weekend who live here, so it's not like they're visiting or anything. But we saw the new Spider-Man movie. It is dope. Oh, it is worth seeing.
I see that.
Not so. There's a third movie coming out in 9 months, and I did not know that. So
oh weird.
That,
wow.
That kind of
what was the gap between the first two?
Like. 4-5 years, so yeah, considerably be better. But I thought this was like a self-contained story, not like a
little chapter.
Wait 9 months,
part one, yeah,
yeah. But it is amazing. The art style is incredible in it. Like I will probably see it again because it is just a feast for the eyes for sure. So yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen any of the Spider-Verse movies.
Oh, really?
Dude.
But I feel like I have seen every single frame of them because, I follow anime, like, you know, just I know animation nerds and they're just kind of like posting them and dissecting exactly what is amazing about them aside from just what is apparent just by looking at them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You should see both of them.
I know.
Stop hanging out with middle schoolers. Go watch Spider-Man.
next time you have middle schoolers that are scared you're going to narc on them, be like, I'll see your crawdads and raise you a Spider-Verse.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something feels unwholesome about that. Nice.
I was going to say, it's got to be one of my favorite media types to watch of like, someone taking a thing and then dissecting, like, here's why this is way cooler than you even realize. Like, allowing you to get past the surface level appreciation to like, oh my God, there's way more going on here than I could understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm glad you got to hang out and enjoyed the movie. David, how about you?
I had a pretty eventful weekend. It was So this is, you know, Pride Month. So we had our local Pride Parade.
Ooh,
nice.
So that was a lot of fun. Just kind of, you know, did sort of a square around the kind of downtown of Huntsville.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really cool. A bunch of people, you know, turned out for the actual parade. And then, you know, ton of people, you know, turned out to watch and cheer and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was a really, really good time. Had a couple of floats. There's a drag queen float that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, just the... I don't know. It's not my religion, so I'm not sure what it's called, but whatever the local like pagan church, whatever those are called, mm-hmm. Was there and had a thing, stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun. My, there were two quotes I heard from the thing that I really digged. One, we're walking. It's, you know, whatever, like 80, 90 degree weather, middle of Alabama, tons of sun. And someone just says, why couldn't Stonewall have held off for a more temperate month?
Especially in Alabama, geez.
Yeah. And then the other thing I you know, so, you know, I was wearing a corset and, you know, like, none of my clothing had pockets because that's, you know, how clothing works sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I had like, you know, kind of a, like a sling bag and stuff like that. So just all sorts of straps and stuff like that. And one of them, like, one of the corset like things comes undone. And someone just says completely deadpan, "Oh no, your various anime straps." Yeah, I don't know why, but
that's very good.
The other thing I loved is right at the end there were two protesters, and it's the same people that are always protesting it.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're
at the end, like the electric wires at the end of the Spartan runs or whatever.
Yes, exactly. but they their sign this time is all in rainbow. So we get done. They were at like say like the you know, three quarters mark. So, you know, the last quarter there wasn't really anyone there. So we're just kind of, you know, all talking as we walk back, and we're talking about it, and someone's like, "Oh wait, those were protesters? I just saw someone with a rainbow sign and assumed they were on our side." Got 'em.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, no, it was a good time. It's put on by Northrop Grumman, which is not who you exactly expect
oh,
to.
Oh jeez.
But you know, this is a defense contractor city, so.
Right, right. Well, you know,
any port in the storm,
exactly.
Yeah, any chance to get together? Yeah, exactly. I think it's impossible to avoid a corporate pride big event like that. So
yeah, oh, I mean, so Rolling Stone did an editorial that I love. That's like, damn it, after Target and Budweiser copped out, I'm now basically obligated to like any corporate pride that actually doesn't waffle and like wimp out, I have to at mm-hmm. least give it a little bit of a pass to.
Yeah, man, those diminished expectations, huh?
Yeah, it's like all the people being like, damn it, how dare you make me root for Disney.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Whoever wins.
Wild and stupid times. Yeah, pretty exactly. Whoever wins, like, no, a pox on all your houses. I see you guys fighting. I'm gonna throw a knife in between you. There you go.
saying of which, I saw I think it was today headlines that the Florida gender affirming care ban has been had a stay put on it, at least.
Oh, yep. I didn't see that. I know the drag ban in Tennessee got tossed out by a Trump appointee.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, that one got at least a stay on it as well. And that wasn't just a drag ban. Like that was a that also had to do with care, and I think there's some women's health stuff in there.
It was an other ban.
Yeah.
And like they seem to like to do. But I would love if Pride Month was just undoing all of this bullshit that has been cropping up.
I've only been to
that would make for the best Pride Month.
I've only been to one Pride. It was 2015. It was so cool. It was 2015, the day after it was the day of the Obergefell decision. So when gay marriage was, you know, legalized at the federal level. And it was real neat to be at that particular place at that particular time in, you know, in history. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I remember that day.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, happy Pride, everybody.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think we should talk about video games. Not that it's not fun to talk about Pride and stuff.
We had unanimously upbeat summary things.
We did.
Sweet. Yeah. Let's see if we can turn that one around, huh, guys?
We can do it if we try. In a regular show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I think everybody here was here last time. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to ask who has something new.
Say Cole, throw to whoever was least present last time.
I can't recall.
Oh, wow. Wow. That raises some,
we'll make this really, really tense. No, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So I've actually got a couple of things.
Okay.
So I gave Farscape Pioneers a shot, which came out on Game Pass, and is kind of if you mashed up Terraria and RimWorld.
Huh.
Yeah. So you crash land on a desert planet. And, you have to find other survivors and, get resources, stuff like that, and ultimately build a ship to escape. However, it's, side view, voxel, or I don't know if they're voxels, if it's 2D. Anyways, voxel-esque.
Tile-based. Also, you said Farscape. This is Farworld. Far World Pioneers.
Okay, my bad.
Based on what I'm looking, I was like, oh, they made a Farscape game. Weird.
No, I would love a Farscape game, but
okay.
So really, really cool idea. Kind of neat. The only problem is this is a game that it was a 1.0 release, and this is about at the level of early access.
Oh no. Okay. Yeah, that explains the reviews I'm seeing.
If they can, pull it off, I could see it being eventually a good game, but right now, it's one of the biggest things is you have one character you directly control, unlike say RimWorld, where you're kind of not exactly controlling any of the characters.
You're a disembodied administrator,
right? Exactly. And the thing is, your NPCs can basically only do fairly dumb labor.
Okay.
And so they can't do things like restocking campfires, like adding more fuel to campfires.
Oh, okay.
Which means that like when you go off exploring, which you have to do because you have to like go to this place to get the schematics for the ship or whatever, if there's a cold snap, they'll just freeze to death because they're not smart enough to keep the fire going.
Oh geez, it's like turkeys looking up during a rainstorm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, an interesting idea. You know, I hope good things come of it, but cannot recommend right now.
Hmm.
It seems you are not alone in that.
Yeah. I mean, so what the hurdle on that has to be, I mean, like on the, specifically on the management thing is like, you cannot give people like either multi-step instructions or conditional instructions.
Yeah. Yes. Although honestly, it most comes across like they just haven't implemented, everything. Cause there's also weird things where like they won't reliably butcher animals.
But
so what, like you'll
they don't got the stomach for it.
They're more alive after they're done. sorry guys, I hired a vet.
and then also like there's some weird things like your character can do everything except for research.
Okay.
So it just comes across like they just didn't get time to implement everything.
Did it have an early release period? Early access period?
I don't
period?
Think so.
Oh, that's a shame.
Oh, yeah.
So
I guess I misunderstood. I thought this game was still in early access, but yeah.
No, that's the problem, is that it's not in early access.
Got it.
What did they, even beyond just like where it's at, like, you know, just where we're all, whenever any of us brings up a game, I think all of us do a search to see if it's on Steam so we can follow along and think of questions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're responding to the review reception, right? And like, what did they expect would happen is my question.
The other thing I think is like, what is the fallout of like, they got, Microsoft to put it on Game Pass.
Whoa. Oh, I forgot about that detail.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would think that Microsoft is probably particularly upset because, granted, this wasn't like a big game for them, but like their most recent big ad was Redfall, which was kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
looks
whatever.
Like everyone's desperate to put stuff out, it seems.
Yeah. Is the Game Pass content pipeline getting starved here? Like, what's,
I don't know.
What's going on?
Yeah. No clue, but that's a bummer because like, seems like a perfectly fine. I mean, like it sounds like it's an elaboration or at least a variation on what was it? Starbound.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which was the other, it was a sci-fi Terraria that also was disappointing and didn't really go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just took heavy inspiration from it.
That's a shame.
On a more positive note, though, I picked up Diablo 4.
Ooh. Oh, shit.
Hey-o. I'm surprised you're here right now.
Yeah, you know, it was tough. Strictly speaking, you don't know that I'm not playing on another screen.
I would hear the clicking.
Yeah. Also the fact
we know how good you are at muting, David.
Yes. Also the fact that, like, my internet connection is still working, so.
Right.
But no, yeah, it's, you know, this is the, fourth game in the series. I guess that goes with being called Diablo 4. But is, you know, kind of the pitch for this one is it's sort of a return to form for it. You know, particularly in terms of both bringing back a lot more of the darker kind of gothic tone of the of 2 and Diablo. And then also in terms of having a more sophisticated skill tree.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Also, the classes you can play this time around are a lot more things that have been in previous games. So you've got like the Barbarian that's been every game. The Necromancer, I think, has been in all except the original. You've got the Rogue back from the original, stuff like that. So it's really, from what I've seen so far, it seems like they're trying to pull in and sort of overcorrect from, or at least correct from some of the criticisms from Diablo 3.
Mm-hmm.
I love that this entire conversation ignores the existence of Diablo Immortal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a sideshow.
Yeah, I did find it funny that the like special edition gives you a whole bunch of, you know, like you get a, I don't know, some sort of creature like pet in World of Warcraft and something in Overwatch. And then there's something you get in Diablo Immortal. It's like, yeah, that would be a big selling point.
I mean, so like related to the immortal thing, you know, speaking of like weird cash grabs and ill-advised, you know, beta win kind of structures, Diablo 3 kind of stumbled out of the gate, with its cash auction house, and just some weird monetization and like online service kind of stuff. I've heard mixed things about how much this kind of dabbles in that. Like, what's your impression of like, I don't know, how much you can play this without feeling like you're being squeezed?
Sure. So it definitely, you know, has an in-game, like, you know, real, you know, premium currency store.
Mm-hmm.
However, they've been, you know, very explicit that it's only going to be cosmetic items.
Okay.
So assuming they stick to that, you know, that's a good thing. They have said that there's going to be a season pass, once every approximately 3 months.
Okay.
Which is less ideal. Well, you know, that's kind of a mixed thing. On the one hand, it's cool that, you know, new content. On the other hand, you know, having to buy, I think it's $10 for a season pass.
That
sort of sucks, but that's not horrible.
Well, the question is, does the season pass contain enough to get the next season pass? Because I feel like that was something that Fortnite always did, where, hey, as long as you're still playing, the season passes will be free after the initial purchase, because we'll give you it in the main one, and it's only if you fall off that you'd have to rebuy. But I feel like now a lot of season passes don't do that anymore, and that you're going to have to rebuy with actual money every time, regardless.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. The first season starts mid-July, so I think probably it'll be a thing where, you know, we'll wait and see then. The big thing I don't like about it is I think they've basically said that they are going to be expecting you to create a new character for each season. Which, like, that's a thing. Like, that's how Path of Exile basically works. You know, where each season there's in effect a game mode with special rules and, you know, new events and stuff like that. And then so you create a character that's in that game mode. But, you know, I don't know. I'm very much a make one character and then get them to like a level ability.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's interesting you mentioned that. Because I remember seeing that after you get your first character to end game, they will actually give you the option to kind of skip story content on subsequent characters.
Really? I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about the gameplay design to comment further on it. But yeah, it does seem, you know, depending on the way they design the gameplay loop, that's a very viable thing to do and have it not be icky.
Yeah, that does sound good. I've also seen there are at least some stat increases that once you get them, they apply to every character. So like the various challenges and stuff like that give stat increases. So it seems like potentially that's a thing. The other thing I'm hoping, I haven't checked yet, but If your equipment, if you salvage it at the blacksmith, you then unlock that appearance that you can make any item look like that. So I'm hoping whatever items they add for the season passes will then be unlocked and you can then, you know, at least get the appearance on any character. mm-hmm. which is kind of how, some of it works with like Destiny 2.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's like, playing dress up with your little tune.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So the other big thing is that this time around, the levels are not procedurally generated. It's, all bespoke maps, and it's all one massive open world.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So far it's been pretty good. You start out in like kind of a icy pseudo Russia.
Okay.
And honestly, I just made it through the tutorial because it game came out today.
Mm-hmm.
So can't say that much about it. Apparently, there's a new Deckard Cain. Or Deckard Cain equivalent, whatever.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, like, Deckard Cain bot 2.0?
Yeah, you know, he actually, he swiped the Soul Stone, and no one
really realizes it, but Deckard Cain is a title, not a name. The Deckard is dead, long live the Deckard.
And the plot line is that the demon... Lilith that created the world of Sanctuary was then exiled from it, has found a way to come back, and she is kind of she's not on the side of the demons or on the side of heaven, and I don't know, is up to no good.
How's it feel? I mean, does it, I don't know. There was something about Diablo 3 where no matter how much they were trying to make it feel snappy, it never actually did compared to my mm-hmm. memories of the way that the sprite-based, there's something inherently mushy about 3D graphics. Have they gotten over that hump?
I think they have. It very much feels like, classic, like Diablo 2. Mm-hmm. I've only played as the rogue. And that character can either be kind of a fast stabby character or a ranged archer character.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels just like classic Diablo. You can kite around enemies. You can wade in and just start swinging at things. They do keep the evade feature from the console versions of Diablo 3 is now on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It also seems like they really try to, the way your abilities work now is any of your abilities can be upgraded up to 5 times, which just makes them do more damage, then can be enhanced, which gives some sort of bonus that's related to kind of the utility side of them, and then you can choose one of 2 upgrades for it.
Okay.
And all of the abilities I've seen so far are really do a lot to try to not just be basic attack, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, one of them that's kind of cool is there's a, shadow stab ability. That's one of the basic attack options for the rogue that once you attack an enemy for 3 seconds, you can just it basically turns off collision with the enemy. So you can just walk right through a crowd. And then one of the enhancements for it is if you do that, they then get debuffed. So right out of the box, it's basically designed to, keep you from getting overwhelmed and be able to escape.
Okay.
But then it can become this debuff ability.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Like I said, I have not played a whole lot, so this is kind of just first impressions. seems much much darker, you know, much more gritty, which is pretty cool.
My understanding is that the cutscenes are rad as hell.
Yeah. They do a lot of really cool, almost hand painted looking cutscenes. That are kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Ben, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have a group of people that you want to play this with online, or are you soloing it?
I'm soloing it right now. You know, definitely open to co-op play, but yeah. Usually what I've done in the past is, unless I'm playing with people I know, like first time through, I solo it and then start, you know, pick up grouping.
I think my barometer for the quality of this game is how long it's been since I've heard anything on a Discord server I'm on with some computer science friends from Cincinnati, and it's been mm-hmm. silent for like the last week, so... Wow. Sounds like it's good.
Nice.
Or rather, doesn't sound like it's good.
Wah, wah, wah.
Very subjective, I guess, yeah.
No. Nice. So, Far World Pioneers and Diablo 4.
Yep.
Cool. Who else wants to go? Ben.
All right. I just got one. I just got the Zelda update. That's the only one I've been kind of grinding on. Nice. So I've still played it a bunch. I think since last week. I think last week I had 3 of the 4 temples. I've gotten all 4. It sends you, I don't think it's the end boss, but it sends you to Hyrule Castle after that. And there's a boss battle there. I've not beaten that. I kind of continually get one-shotted by that. So I've kind of decided to explore around the rest of the map and kind of continue to just kind of follow my nose. Whatever looks interesting, mm-hmm. like go and check that out. And that's been pretty good. I've slowly been learning more of the mechanics of the game kind of one by one. I've been exploring the depths. Like there's a lot of economy in this game where, you know, even though they technically tell you like what it does, like in one line of dialogue and during the tutorial, you kind of forget about it because it's been like 20 yeah. hours since then, you know? So I've kind of been revisiting some of those, or some of it, it might be a mission you just haven't run into where they tutorialize what a certain mechanic is. But in any case, like in certain points I've started looking at the map, or I've started like looking up, like, how do I do this? Or what is this economy for? If it's not like evident through the game for how to do it. And so there's some positives with that. For example, they tell you this is a tutorial, but there's this one economy you can collect where it'll extend your battery life, which is super helpful because like any sort of machine you build is it'll run on the battery that you have. And so by default, you have like 3 bars and a single battery. You can extend that for every like 100 of a resource that you have. So I think I upped it to, 7 just today because I had all those resources just sitting around, didn't know what they were good for. So that, I mean, that kind of adds to kind of satisfaction where it makes it so it's easier to explore. Another example is the Kurok seeds that you find. This is similar to Breath of the Wild. They're like the Easter eggs that you find like littered all over the map. You know, like
the things you torture.
Well,
you load them into a contraption and you say, press ignition and may God's love be with you.
I guess that's one way to get the Kurok seeds, but you can find them just like if you're,
you can see a weird circle of stones.
Exactly. Yeah. But those extend, there's somebody at the like main hub village or whatever, where they'll extend, your capacity for armor or weapons or bows, for how many you can hold at any given time. So it's like, oh, okay. Something like that, like adds a little bit of nicety. So it's a lot easier. I can have like 15 weapons now instead of like 5. So those are like kind of small rewards. I still am like a little bit disappointed in the fact that like, any sort of boss battle, because there's like random bosses you can run into. There's plenty of them where you just get one-shotted and it's like, well, time to go back to my last checkpoint and do something else, I guess.
One of the developers played a lot of Elden Ring.
It also doesn't have to be boss fights. Sometimes a regular enemy can just do that to you.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, my guess is maybe that there's like armor out there that might, you know, like help mitigate that. And you can get fairies, which will revive you and like fill up your hearts if you get hit. But it's just kind of annoying.
Still doesn't feel good.
Yeah, exactly. Especially since the game is kind of built on like exploration. it sucks that as you're exploring something, you just run into something that kills you, and then it kind of sets you back. And it's a little bit antithetical to like the design of the game. I think there has to be a better way to handle that with respect to the storyline bosses. And what I was comparing it to in my mind today was like Subnautica, because in essence they're doing the same thing. With Subnautica, it's like you need to build a rocket. Like, here's all the resources you need, and you're like, well, shit, I don't have any of those. I guess I need to explore like a whole bunch more. For some reason, that seems fair. But then like running into like some boss in Hyrule that I'm not going to say, and getting one shot at my head, it's like, oh, I guess I need to grind out a bunch of hearts. For some reason, that doesn't feel fair though. Like, because it's like you're just like arbitrarily setting like the health and damage that like the boss is doing. It just feels less fair is the only way I can think of describing it. So I don't know. I'm sure there's probably, you could brainstorm and there's probably some solutions to that of how you can make that experience like a little bit better. Even like one of the most common things you can do is run into shrines, and with enough of those, you can up your stamina or hearts. Like, you just see something like have a tower or something like that, where it's like, as a way to box like with how high your stamina is, and like have that be something that's kind of like natural. But then again, the game's so open-ended that there's probably ways to like cheese that sort of thing. So it's kind of like one of those things where there's like, they're constantly hoisted by their own petard, where it's like they give you all this freedom. So then it's really, really hard to design puzzles within that. Like, the only way the shrines work is because they're so heavily sandboxed, and it's just like, you are in the single room. Like, there are very, you know, like, there's infinite falling below, and there's like a ceiling way too high above you. Like they have to sandbox things like that to have any sort of like actual coherent challenges. But when it comes to like having challenges in the map where they don't have that same level of control, it's really hard to do the same sort of thing. So, I don't know, but I'm not trying to rag on the game completely. I have like found a lot more in the underground areas that kind of makes sense, or like I'm starting to like understand more of like the iconography. Some of the NPCs kind of lead you in the right direction. I did one sort of task because I heard it would help you get the Master Sword, but that is not immediately the case. You do all the things and you just unlock videos, but you don't unlock any items. So I was kind of upset by that because that took a little bit of time. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I can say is I'm still exploring. There's still things that I'm interested in exploring. However, I feel like I'm running into the same sort of position that I did on the first game, where it's like there's walls I'm running into, and the only way around it seems to be like I need to do other grindy sort of elements of the game to level myself up so that I could coherently try something. And that doesn't feel as great, but.
So I feel like the feature of this game that I had never heard of before, that to me I feel like should be led with, is apparently you can get a mask that just lets you hang out with what the little gremlin things, where they like boggolins or something.
Oh yeah, they see you as like friendlies. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds amazing. That you can just be like, screw Hyrule, I'm going to, you know, live the rest of my life as a fucked up little dude.
I wonder if it works the opposite, if the regular good guys start attacking you when you're the mask.
Goblin mode Link. Yeah. All that makes sense.
Yeah. Have you continued playing this at all, Cole?
No, I've been doing other stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
No one to bounce off of then.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's all good.
The things that you're saying do remind me of, you know, issues that I had with Breath of the Wild in terms of like, you know, when the answer is go do more shrines, and it's like, I don't know, I've done a bunch of shrines. My appetite's kind of down for those. I'd kind of like to do some other stuff, and I'm like, no, more shrines. It's like,
wait a second, this is grinding.
No. Yeah.
I was particularly excited about the whole battery extension thing, because it's like, that was one problem I had with like all the contraptions you build, is it's like, okay, this took me like 5 minutes and it runs for like 30 seconds and now I have to like walk because it's dead now. So at least there's some like hope for that to be more, to have more life in its legs. But that said, I still have fun. Even if I build a contraption and it doesn't do much, it still is very satisfying just to do that. And they have a lot of pre-made ones kind of like in the wild that you can run into. And so, for example, like there was a rock drill that that was like manually built there, where it's like two wheels, a spoke between them, and then a wheel with like something sharp on it on the front. So like when you're running it, yeah, so it just like spins around and can drill into rock if you wanted to do that. It's like, oh, that's really clever. Nice. Thanks.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I haven't been, so I've not played more Zelda. Was that all you had, Ben?
That's all I got.
Yeah. I haven't played more Zelda because I've been mainlining a game for WoW, Pentiment.
Hey.
Finally played and beat that, Ben.
Yeah.
Game's real good.
Yeah. How far are you into it?
Oh, I beat it last night.
Oh, yeah. Hell
yeah. Recording it. We're recording about it on Thursday. Go check that conversation. But just like while I'm here with you, Ben, that's really good.
Yeah.
That's like, I don't know. I called it on Twitter last night, like heartwarming and beautiful.
Yeah.
Or not heartwarming. It is warm and beautiful. Because like there's an awful lot about it that's very bleak. But like, in terms of getting, like, it's a slow start, but getting real invested in these characters in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it being like just real, just wrapped around the axle on the fates of everybody. And like, I don't know, it does really sweet stuff with time.
I think when I beat that game, it was like at something like 3 a.m. because like the last like 4 hours of the game, it's like, well, I'm not going to quit now. You know, like, I want to check this out. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, it is. It's quite an experience. Yeah. The other thing I want to say is like, I don't know if I mentioned before or not, but it's like, I started a second playthrough and got maybe like half an hour into it. And I'm like, this feels wrong. Like I don't want to play the game again. Like I just want the single story to exist in my mind, you know? And like,
I made my choices.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Pentiment is real good. We're talking about it on WoW, for episode 400 actually, coming out here. So wild. Let's see here. The thing that I actually brought to talk about is I've been streaming and have played enough of Amnesia Rebirth to comment. This is not the new... Go ahead.
I was going to say, that sounds foreboding.
Yeah, this is not the newest Amnesia. Amnesia the Bunker just came out today, actually. I had not beaten Amnesia Rebirth, just figuring out like, oh, I'm going to play this for fun. And then I forgot that I don't play things for fun. And then it didn't get on the streaming for a while. So I was like, I'll stream this just so I can, just time along with the new game coming out. This came out in 2020. It's not a direct sequel, but it takes place after the original Amnesia, The Dark Descent, and has more to do with the original than A Machine for Pigs,
Wouldn't it have to take place like 100 years after the original? Because like the original was like 1800s or something, right?
Yeah, the original was like in the 1830s, and then this one is in the 1930s. You are a draftsman. Who is sent along who is sent along on an expedition refurbish or like reopen a gold mine that had shut down, but your plane is brought down in Algiers in the desert, and like between the plane crash and when you wake up back in the plane, a whole bunch of time has passed, and suddenly terrible things are happening to your crew who have kind of strewn about around the region, and something is terribly wrong with you. Namely, you forgot that you were pregnant. Yeah. And also you're traveling between dimensions, and when you're in the other dimension, that baby is growing very rapidly. So you're trapped in this horrible situation with monsters about as this story of your progressing pregnancy and illness is kind of going along, and you are trying desperately to find out what happened in that time that you cannot account for. And also to get to a doctor so that you can try and address at least one of these very acute problems that is going on. It's notable that it takes place in Algiers because, and this is getting into some lore from the original Amnesia, which I'm a total sicko for. I understand if people are not sickos for lore, but it feels like this game was kind of made for me. One of the inciting, things about the original game was this magical orb was taken from an excavation by the main character from Africa. And then this shadowy force started coming after him and trying to kill him. And then he flees to this place in Prussia, to talk to this mystical expert to try and figure out what's going on. The place where you go is where that orb originated from. Okay. Not originated from on this earth.
Was first found.
Yes. Yes. Was found here. And so it is connected cosmologically to the events that happen in the original Amnesia in a way that is illustrative about where the villain in that came from, what their goals are and what ultimately would have come of it if they got what they wanted.
When you say the villain, do you mean the monster or the player?
I would say the player is also a monster. The player is a villain in that, but specifically like the mystical mentor Alexander von Brennenberg is who I would consider to be the villain of that, because he's the string puller kind of guy.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a bunch of story stuff. From a play perspective, this I think splits the difference pretty well. So original Amnesia, still the scariest of these, to my mind. The scariest of games that Frictional has put together, and also, I think, the scariest, in this, barring certain moments in Amnesia, or not Amnesia, in Outlast Whistleblower, the scariest of these kind of first-person horror games, right? Mm-hmm. Partially because in Amnesia, the first one, you had puzzles and enemy evasion happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. You would be trying to search and find stuff and figure out what to do with it while enemies were pursuing about, and you had to hide, and if you were seen you had to run and cower and hope that they didn't get to you and kill you, otherwise you would have to reload. It was very mechanically rigorous, and I think that played with the fear angle of it better and I think more stressfully than they would have in either Soma or in Amnesia Machine for Pigs, mm-hmm. Which was kind of all story and like the illusion of pursuit and puzzles that were basically, dang, this lever's missing. Oh, wait, the lever's over here on this table in the same room. Like they designed puzzles into it and then they cut them out for Amnesia Machine for Pigs. I like the story in that game, but it kind of comes up short when you think about it. Very quickly you realize, oh yeah, nothing is actually gonna hurt me, and that takes away some of the fear. This splits the difference pretty well insofar as when a monster's out, it is like very specifically an evasion kind of section, but like you are just focusing on that, and it is pretty tough, and it will always end up turning into a thing where you have to run and navigate this course to get away from it so you can get to kind of the next thing. A thing that I am tired of in first person horror games is, okay, this thing is hunting for you. It has given you an indication that it is going to, that it has found you. So go and hide in a closet. It's always a closet, maybe sometimes a locker, sometimes under a bed, but go and hide and then just wait until it seems like it's safe to go. And then you go. I think that is a dead mechanic. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that they don't do that here. There is nary a closet to hide in. What you are doing is trying to get around this thing that is looking for you, in order to make your escape. You're not just hiding and waiting for it to wander away, and to actively discourage you from hiding in a place and just kind of staying there. The monsters can smell you.
Oh,
Yeah.
Huh.
Because you're not supposed to stand still. It's not like you need to navigate the space and you're waiting for this thing to go away so you have some free room. When a monster is out, it is a thing for you to get past. And if you try to fall into the bad habit of, you know, I'm in this dark room, my lantern is off, I don't care if I'm taking hits to my sanity, this thing is not going to see me and kill me. You can wait there not as long as you want. You'll wait there. The thing will sniff you out and come after you. The game is trying to keep you moving on, and it makes for these incredibly tense chases that end up working really well with the formula. And this is coupled with some very good puzzles, you know, like way better than anything in the first game was in terms of, you know, trying to figure out a contraption and or a device, sometimes both at the same time. You know, getting into like Mist or Scorn kind of territory when it comes
a
to
a lot of Scorn.
Yeah. And it came out before Scorn. This is like a 2020 game. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you ever doing the puzzles while you're being chased as well?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, that's good.
Yes. Yeah. And so like I've never like this is not a game I heard anybody talk about, really. Didn't make the same splash that The Dark Descent did, but like it feels like a really good evolution of where Frictional had been, you know, 13 years ago with The Dark Descent, and then also with Soma, which kind of I think had much more in common with The Dark Descent 8 years ago. This feels pretty good, and it makes me really excited to see what the bunker ends up being about and seeing how that plays.
So the one thing that to me, and granted, I haven't actually played any of these games. This is just outside looking in. But it seems like, you know, I can't believe this is still in the game, is the weird, like, click and drag to, like, open doors and do cranks and stuff. Like, I thought we, as a, you know, society, decided to stop that with, like, Trespasser.
They built their engine and they're sticking with it.
Yes, I could make a defense of those, but what I'm going to do instead, well, what I will do first is, do y'all remember the Novant Falcon?
No.
The what?
No.
Okay, Novant Falcon, N-O-V-I-N-T, and then Falcon like the bird.
Okay.
This was a controller, like came out back around the time of... Yeah, came out back around the time of Half-Life 2. It was a like a physical controller. It sat on your desk. It looked kind of like the end of the portal gun. You're probably getting it, but I'll describe it for the listeners. It's like a little orb, and then there are these three like kind of arms all converging on the smaller kind of like control point with some buttons on it. And the idea was you moved this thing around in 3D space, and it provided resistance to accomplish what David is talking about, like, oh, it feels like opening a door. You know, it feels like I'm moving the sand around kind of deal. Never used one. Always seemed like it would be really cool. But them's the breaks. I'm looking at one on Amazon right now, and it's not even available. Like, maybe there's one on eBay, possibly.
So I know there are equivalents to this that are apparently used in, like, 3D drafting and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. But. Yeah. The funniest thing about the Novant Falcon that I saw was somebody combined it with VR and a fleshlight to make.
I was gonna say we all know where this is going.
Exactly. Yeah. Which
how much resistance can it be?
So I just wanted to ask that because that is a fun digression. In defense of opening doors and, you know, moving locks or whatever, when something is chasing you and you are trying to use this very ungainly system that is modeling actual physics, and there's a very real chance that you're going to like mess up because opening a door is not as simple as clicking on the door and having it open or pressing use on the door and having it open. But like you've got to walk up and then open it and then like slam it closed behind you as you turn around. That's mm-hmm. just enough sense of like moving an actual body in physical space to make it feel like you could fuck up in a way that is like somebody running from a monster in a slasher movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's you know? Reasonable.
Yeah, so I welcome the presence that it's there. The only time I roll my eyes at it is when it's like, all right, it's time to turn this valve handle to raise a grate or something. And then you've got to take your mouse and go, rrr. You know, make big circles like a fucking dumbass. If I get those like fun little like approximating the Innsmouth chase from Call of Cthulhu Dark Corners of the Earth, then I will take those super goofy, you're turning a valve wheel. It feels like you're turning the valve wheel Indigo Prophecy moments, right?
It's a feature, not a flaw.
Yeah. So I dig it. Like, it's real good. I haven't finished it yet, but I enjoy where the story is going. Like, it is properly mindfucky in a real cosmic way that is paying off for me, kind of knowing the lore of the original from having played it so many times, you know? Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I was impressed. It looked to me like it did a lot more in what I would describe at least as BS, or a lot less BS in terms of, I saw a lot of Let's Plays of the original Amnesia that was like, the monster just decides to like camp the area you need to get to. And so it's like 15 minutes of like run, get seen, run and hide in a closet, you know, try it again five times over.
That ended up being one of my main problems with Alien Isolation. It was kind of all that. And I'm sick of it.
Yeah. Whereas this, it almost, I don't know if it was programmed this way, but it almost seemed like the hiding was almost an intelligence check in that, like, it seemed like if you were doing the right thing and being conscientious, like, usually it would kind, you know, it wouldn't. Does that make sense? Like, you'd be able to pull off what you're trying to pull off.
In the old model, it was just, you know, hide in this closet and hope that you were far enough ahead of this thing for it not to get you, and then hope you passed the die roll or whatever for it not to just kind of check in there randomly. Right.
Right. Exactly.
In this, you have to be so much more intentional about like where you are leading it to, and then hide just long enough to get it to slow down and look, and then wait for a moment where you can make a break for it. Like, that is a much more entertaining loop than just wait for the game to decide that you're no longer in trouble.
It also seemed like it had a lot more where you could kind of stumble around and still be okay, in terms of like, you know, you could maybe like, you know, it would see you when you're getting out of your hiding spot, but you know, it still wandered away enough that you can like just dash the rest of the way through the door. It seemed like you didn't, it wasn't either pass or fail, you know?
Yeah. You can fuck around a little bit, and they lay traps for that stuff too. Like, physics objects will fall over, you know, you'll open up a door and then run into something that was precariously leaned up and like, oh, here you go. You know, they're playing with you. It feels like they are, you know, trying to solve for maximum drama in a way that absolutely befits.
Yeah, that's a way to say it. Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really impressed by what I watched.
Nice. You're really liking watching horror games, aren't you?
Yeah, I see, that's my whole thing, is I love horror. I just don't like playing horror games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not even talking about my streams in general. It's been fun talking with you about this stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so totally. Sorry we're open and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. That's all I got. Amnesia Rebirth and a little bit of Pentiment for Ben.
A little Bentiment.
Now I'm just thinking of Bentos.
Now I'm thinking of Benzos.
Oh no.
Waff, 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 waff.
Benzo's a great one. It's like fast travel to the hospital. That's not my joke. It's from the internet. Dennis, round us out.
Chances are anything you say is from the internet. That's like in our age. Yeah, I got just my normal bullshit, man. I've been deep in a Trackmania hole.
Is there a new season?
Not a new season, but it did launch on consoles. Oh. So there is a huge influx of new players.
Mm.
And so, yeah, really the only interesting thing I have on it is just to watch the acculturation of new players to the game.
Okay.
Because they're like all the discussion in the Discords and stuff that I'm in is around like, man, like chat got really hostile in the game all of a sudden. What happened? And they're like, oh, it's. You know,
it's like David was talking about last week. It's the eternal September.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, they don't understand that we're cool to each other here. And like Trackmania is genuinely one of the most just pleasant communities, even in ranked and all that stuff. Like everyone's just chill.
Yeah. Well, it's not directly competitive. Like, how could you be a dick to somebody?
Yeah. Right. Well, in ranked mode, there is like, there's teams of three and, points based on where you score, that your team needs to get a certain number of points. So that does make sense. It is competitive. But that's like one mode of the game. Yeah. And in general, it's just a super, super chill, supportive community. And so there's kind of this, like, everyone's holding their breath right now, to see like, okay, will the console players figure out to be chill? Or do we just have to say goodbye to those days where you didn't have a hot mess in chat?
I would bet on the former. I would say this is a fire that's going to burn itself out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and not least because if you want to rage in chat in Trackmania, that's time that you're not spending driving your car.
Jokes on you.
Very hard to flame someone and win. So,
well, maybe I'm wrong. I didn't realize. I thought Trackmania was all asynchronous multiplayer. Like, I thought it was like they post up the track of the week and then you have a week to like get your best time.
It's a land of ghosts.
Yeah, it primarily, yes. There's two instances.
Dude, are people trolling the ghosts?
How you would do that is just typing into an empty chat in single player mode. First off, the track of the day is a race that happens in rounds. So you have 15 minutes to set your best time, and then it breaks the times into 64 person servers. So server 1, 2, 3, 4, it's divisions. And then you just run the track in rounds where the last four people every round drop until you get to top 16, and then it's the last two every round drop to top 8, and then it's one per round. So that's directly competitive. And then the ranked mode for it is the campaign maps, played in rounds in teams of three. I think it's first place gets 6 points, second gets 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, on down. And, the first team to hit 11 points wins.
Mm.
So, you know, you can, you know, if, as long as you finish, you're at least scoring points for your team. If you don't even finish, you don't get any points. And there's like, it's like if you win, you kind of like, there's only a few scenarios where you can win and your team doesn't. So it's a pretty elegant system. It works. But yeah, apparently there are just some people being rude right now that, that will hopefully iron themselves out. But yeah, big things for the game though, just in terms of visibility and popularity. I think it's 2024 that the Olympics are in France. And there is a huge, because Nadeo is a French company that makes Trackmania, and there's like a huge Trackmania event that's kind of pseudo coinciding with the Olympics going on.
That's pretty cool.
So it's I forget if it's officially like an e-sport for the Olympics or kind of like unofficially like an exhibition sport or something like that.
This guy could go off on a brief tangent, but
sure.
I was reading a thing that like, some of the older Olympics had art and architecture events, which I think is amazing.
Older Olympics were weird because they also had like a world's like a bigger world's fair kind of kind of element to them. Oh, yeah,
that's rad as hell.
So like, I would love to see like esports and art and music and like all this stuff be added to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be really cool.
The Olympics, like, they endorsed some kind of esport thing, but it was very clearly graft, which is surprising because how could the Olympics committee be corrupt at all? For shame. I don't know. It's, yeah.
Well, There are esports tie-ins, but they are all esport analogs to actual sports.
Yes, right. And the simulators that they used are all from one particular company that has a very close relationship with people who are on the IOC. So it's like the martial arts simulator and the archery simulator. It's all like one particular company, which is...
If you want, you know, a judo simulator, just play Street Fighter.
Yeah, that feels accurate.
Oh man.
So I've been doing a lot more mapping in Trackmania as well, just to round it out.
Making maps?
Yeah, making maps. And the latest one that I'm working on is a map that is just one big left turn.
Yeah.
So it spirals.
Yeah, I was gonna say NASCAR.
NASCAR, but it goes downward, so it's like a giant spiral that, you know, has different left turns and all that, and it's actually really fun and it feels good. It's on the dirt surface, which is kind of slidey, and so basically this map is in one long drift, which feels good, man. That's fun. So
nice.
Yeah, having a lot of fun.
Did you ever play any of the GTA Online?
I played a very small amount. I don't think I ever played GTA 5 online, but I did play some of the online multiplayer for 4. So I guess that's a not really.
Okay. I just asked because overall GTA 5 online was like a garbage fire. But the map creation was really, really powerful, and you got some just crazy-ass racetracks. But anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my kind of jam. So Trackmania. I am never not playing Trackmania, but I thought it was worth talking about, given the kind of big update. Another game that got a big update and a big competitor this week is Last Epoch, the ARPG. Oh, okay. Alternative to Diablo, that many consider kind of a nice halfway point between the streamlinedness of Diablo and the complexity of Path of Echoes.
Path of Exile.
What did I say?
Path of Echoes?
Path of Echoes.
I think you might have been confusing it with the 1990s Kevin Bacon movie Stir of Echoes.
Yeah, that was it.
That's exactly it.
Well, they Last Epoch put out a big new patch. It's their beta 0.9 patch, so they're very close to a full launch. It was called the Rising Flames patch. I can only assume it's because it reduced their servers to a pile of rising flames.
Oh no.
Yeah, there are a lot of connection problems with the patch. But basically what they did is reworked the first couple chapters of the game. So really kind of tutorial zone and intro to have a lot more coherent story. Initially, you just kind of like, all right, we've dropped you in, start killing things. And that's all you had. And so they've done a good job kind of making it flow a little better diegetically, which that's cool. They have also rounded out their classes. So, you know, there's 5 primary classes, and then at a certain level, each class branches into 3 other classes. But they had not all been finished, you know, yet. So they finished another one of those classes. It's not one that I play, so I'm looking for what that was now. But anyway, yeah. So the game is getting close to a full release. That, you know, it's not having server problems anymore. And I am playing a marksman rogue. It's like a bow and arrow person.
Does that have a cool class name like Tiny Tina's?
No, I wish. But it does have a cool name that I gave her. This is straight from Luke. Early on, I forget, it was For the King was the game that we were playing together, and I let him create a character for it, and he created like a rogue type of character. I was like, what do you want to name it? And he goes, Bonero.
Okay.
It's like Bonero. Okay, that's kind of like, I don't know, like interesting.
One step off from Bolero, like a dance, or the famous Ravel composition. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or One Step of off of Bow and Arrow. And I realize that's literally what he thought Bow and Arrow was Bonero.
Oh, okay. That's good. Hey, yeah, that's good.
Can I shoot a Bonero?
I assume that's just like in Castlevania when there's a skeleton that's like shooting its bones at you. That's mm-hmm. Bonero.
Bonero. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So now any Bow and Arrow based character I create, I name Bonero.
That is extremely cute.
Mm-hmm. But it is a fun character to play. I think I might have mentioned before, like it is a status effect inflicting character, inflicts bleed. And then I take a bunch of skills that hit multiple times, crank up the bleed chance, and people start disappearing real fast. But the fun one, or the fun kind of advancement I got to with the character is she has a smoke bomb, rad as hell. But while I'm in the smoke now, I will blind any enemy I shoot, which makes a ton of sense. And then when I get a kill while I'm standing in the smoke bomb, I get additional bleed. Hmm. And so it is like creating a safe little pocket that I am extra deadly in, firing out of, which feels cool.
No, I remember I was talking about that's like a weird little roguelike synergy you created. Mm-hmm. It's like a monster, mm-hmm. really good monster hand or monster train hand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that continues to be the feels good of this game is building those synergies at a macro level. It's very breezy from a moment to moment gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
So that is Last Epoch, and that's what I've been playing at least of note this week.
Nice. And for people who are curious, we talked about Far World Pioneers, Diablo 4, Tears of the Kingdom, Pentiment, Amnesia Rebirth, Trackmania, and The Last Epoch.
Damn. Good stuff.
Good crap.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I want to know about addition by subtraction. Many games are going to shake things up by taking away something that you've come to rely on. So what game does this most effectively?
We'll get started here with Callum, who says Bloodborne, taking away shields from the Souls formula. And Peter seconds this, saying, I like this answer, even if Bloodborne was my first Souls game. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be weird to start with Bloodborne, but I know a lot of people did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, start with the best.
I mean, arguably. Yeah. Can't disagree with you there. It is very funny that the one shield that they put in the game is an insult to people who would want to use shields.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I took in good fun, even though I'm a player in Dark Souls and in Elden Ring who loves their shield. So.
Well, and you know, like, I don't know a specific one, but I know people did like full runs of the game with the shield, right?
Yeah, I think my understanding is if you completely commit to it, it can actually be super overpowered. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you have to just devote everything to that one goal.
It's like the magic.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, same thing. I mean, that's arguably true of like Blood Tinge builds or like Arcane.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anything that's not the usual strength or dexterity. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says, controversial maybe, but Fire Emblem Echoes, when the weapons triangle was removed from the series, I could confidently use my warlord / pirate without fear of them getting massacred by an assassin or swordmaster or anything that uses a sword, really.
It's a shame that we don't have Jala here. I mean, because it would be fun to have her here, but also she has more kind of context for this. To me, the weapons triangle seems so fundamental to Fire Emblem that I cannot imagine a game without it. But I will take Peter's word for it that it gives you a little bit more freedom in how to spec.
See, for me, from someone with absolutely no context, I assume that the weapons triangle is the Fire Emblem equivalent of the Bermuda Triangle, which is why it's a threat to his pirate.
I mean, it's more, the Bermuda Triangle is more for pilots, but you know,
Yeah, yeah.
No one's saying pilots can't be pirates.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just for people who are curious, because we're saying it like it's a thing. It is a rock, paper, scissor relationship between axes, spears, and swords. Is what it is.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's hear Ben. What does Case say?
Case says the Eventide Island shrine from Breath of the Wild was a gimmick so good they brought it back and improved it for Tears of the Kingdom. It took away every item you had and made you figure out how to survive on what the island presented to you. Plus the ability to make unlimited bombs in Breath of the Wild. I've gone to that island, but I didn't know it did the same thing because I didn't have all my stuff ganked. But
mm-hmm. So apparently this is one of the examples that I kind of inspired the question. Apparently you like need to take the Master Sword there and plug it back in.
Oh.
And then like that kind of, it's like an end game style thing.
Hmm. So you return to the same island on the map.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. I mean, like Eventide Island, it makes a very good, it's a very good, very good case for being at least on the top 10 levels in all games, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I get it. I think Case had a good catch here. Mm-hmm. And Dennis, what does Jack say?
Jack says, niche response, Dark Souls 3 in poise.
God damn it, Jack.
Actual response, but in the same vein, Bloodborne and blocking. So we got two for Bloodborne. The feel in the hands of well-timed dodges and perfect bullet parries was a very elevated chef's kiss.
Yeah, I can get behind it. I'm glad didn't continue in that direction, but yeah.
I think it's kudos to Bloodborne for the extra balls of abandoning a system at the game level.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's plenty of games where like, oh, you were captured and now you lost all your armor, etc. But you can get it back, you know, after that section. Bloodborne's like, nah, no shields for the entire game.
Mm-hmm. What were we going to say, David?
I was going to say, meanwhile, I just have played like every Soulsborne game as like get biggest stick possible and bonk enemies.
That's
which is funny because that always felt to me like that was like an unintended, you know, something the developers didn't intend. And then I read Berserk. I was like, nah, that was probably something the developers intended.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They absolutely wanted that. Yeah. For my answer on this, I'm going to say removing the loot system from Mass Effect 1 going into Mass Effect 2. Mass Effect 2 is far from a perfect shooter, especially nowadays. You know, if you go and play it, it'll be really clear that it is this weird kind of compromise between an RPG system and, you know, what would feel like a polished third person shooter kind of deal. But I think it was absolutely necessary for them to kind of go for that cover based system, just in order to make a gunfight feel like a good gunfight. And part of that, kind of simplification and streamlining was making individual pieces of loot that you got much more meaningful. If you remember, Mass Effect 1 ended up having, like, you would get an inventory just full of almost like a Borderlands style. This is by this manufacturer, which means it specializes in this particular kind of stat. And it's like a plus 0.3 on, you know, on this particular damage output, fucking whatever. No, I don't want that. I don't want to, like, it's not fun for me. Loot is not fun for me to, like, you know, kill somebody and then go in and do a comparison and try and figure out if it's worth learning a new weapon or like replacing something or figuring out if I want to sell it. It's kind of a death by a thousand cuts or just, you know, a whole bunch of small friction adding up to big friction. Kind of thing.
Go it's ahead. Funny how a decimal point just changes how I feel about a game completely, where it's like, oh, 0.5, sure, get that shit out of here. Oh yeah, plus 5, okay, yeah, I can handle that.
Like, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, my rule for video game stats, it's kind of like my rule for currency. If it's anything less than 0.05, then fuck you, go away. Mm-hmm. Like, round everything to the nickel. 5% increase or bust. I don't care if I pick up fewer things, if I have to make fewer like micro decisions, and the things that I get are more meaningful upgrades. Mm.
I think for me, it's the arrows. Meaning if I'm evaluating a weapon by how many green and red arrows there are on it, then it's not worth the upgrade.
Here's the thing.
Yeah,
if it's,
gear scores all the way.
If it's all like, I don't care if it's all up arrows. If the difference is just like 0.03 ice damage when you start a new business in a economically disadvantaged zone and it's at least 40% minority owned, to make a Kamala
Damn
Harris
it, now
joke.
I want to play this game.
Yeah. even if it's like overall, if it is an improvement, but not enough of an improvement, I will throw that fucking thing in the garbage. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
New verbs, people. I want new verbs.
Please.
So I want to tangent you real quick. That reminds me, there is one issue I do have with the new Diablo, and that is they removed inventory Tetris. Every item is the same size, so you basically just have inventory slots. Which
they did a WoW thing with it.
Is probably, like, objectively on some level, like, better game design, but gosh dang it, I loved being like, all right, I just killed this boss, and I've got this stuff, what am I going to toss out and like shift around?
That's a so much more interesting decision than WoW style, like how many slots do I have? Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I mean, I'm going to borrow an idea from from You Look Nice Today. I also think that every check that you get should be sized based on how much money the check is worth.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody's walking home with a $1 million check. You got to fucking know about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, it would be much more difficult to rob someone of like a check the size of a chalkboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, how I have not thought about You Look Nice Today in since college.
It's kind of the perfect podcast. Yeah.
It is. It is a pretty good one.
I've been chasing that for years, man. Anyway, let's see here. I think Ben, how about you?
I think mine's going to be Journey. The fact that, spoilers for the game, in the last level, your ability to jump is limited, and that's what you've been building up the entire game, is a pretty effective subtraction.
Yeah. I mean, I could, again, no spoilers, make a very similar claim about Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those like
gut punch.
Those last minute mechanical changes to things you really took for granted, let's say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. David, how about you?
So my snarky answer is Spec Ops: The Line, where they deleted Power Fantasy. My other kind of snarky answer, but it's seasonally appropriate, is all of the character creation systems now that have subtracted gender.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Body type 1 or 2, or, please, a slider. Sliders, yeah, please.
Nothing will ever be better than Tiny Tina's, where the body types are this one and that one.
Yeah. I was going to say nothing's going to be better than Saints Row 2, but yeah.
What was in that?
As well.
Oh, it was just a slider. And then
just
Saints Row.
Just a slider. Oh, that's actually really, really clever.
Just a slider. And then I don't know if it was Saints Row 3 that added it, but like you could, no matter what your body type was, you could pick what voice you wanted as well.
Yeah.
For many of them.
One of your voice options was just Nolan North.
That was Saints Row 4. That was Saints Row 4.
Oh, that was 4? Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought 3 did that. Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Anyway.
Yeah. There we are. So that was David. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go kind of microcosm here. I love the Arkham City Mr. Freeze boss fight, where every time you deal damage to him, he removes that way of attacking him. And so you basically have to find, it's like 6 or 7 different ways to catch him off guard.
it's really weird to get a final exam in like the first third of a game.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that tells you just how fast it lays out an array of tools for you.
Yeah. God, that's a really good boss fight.
And then the rest of the season was, or rest of the series was just chasing that high.
we had a guest on a patron named Doug to talk about Arkham City when we did that, and after we recorded about that, he sent me a little Mr. Freeze figurine.
Oh, nice!
But it was it was a very thoughtful gift. But he it's like a cute style Mr. Freeze who is trying to eat an ice cream cone through his little head dome thing. It's one of the cutest things. It's really good. it's a good toy. It's a good piece of shelf candy. It's on the shelf that I have for all the stuff that listeners have sent. It's
okay. Now I understand why he's so angry.
As a heads up, if you ever have a hankering for that type of gameplay, Shadows of War is basically that applied to shenanigans.
that being the Arkham style stealth combat, or that being the needing to find different ways to take someone down?
Both, actually.
Okay, what's this game? Yeah.
Middle Earth Shadows of War.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I've been meaning to play that since we did it for WoW. Since we did the first one, Shadow of Mordor for WoW. And also, like, my interest in going back to it really flared up with the release of that just truly terrible, like, so bad I'm thinking of buying it and streaming it Gollum game.
Yeah. Don't you dare.
Looks so garbage.
It looks so bad.
Did you see the dev apology for it?
Oh, I did. No. Yeah. God, this is the year of dev apologies. Like,
you really?
I don't have some. I don't know how that's like validated. Is like, oh yeah, we can release a shitty game and just say sorry for it and then move on. It's like
have some pride. Like for 2-3 decades, developers could just release licensed shit. And like, I was like, oh, well, that's the way it goes. Well, later, I don't pay attention to who you are. So you're just going to keep on doing this. But now they have to be like, we see you, we hear you. Like, no, you can have made a bad game. You're going to have to live with it. You think this is going to change? You think begging for your life is going to make a difference in this situation?
Nothing can stay my Twitter dunks.
Oh, good question, Dennis. Thank you for posting it.
Yeah.
Thank you everybody for participating. If you would like to throw in your answers, watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons at facebook.com. Do a search for Duckfeed Community and join that group.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Hey Dennis, what's too expensive?
Yeah, virtual reality, apparently. Specifically, Apple's virtual reality.
Also regular reality.
Yeah.
This is true. But yeah, so this week they unveiled their Apple Vision Pro headset at a price point so high that the crowd of Apple fanatics that attended their event let out an audible groan. This is priced at $3,500.
Okay. I was trying to think of a number in my head that would be too high for Apple people, and you nailed it. Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So here's where I'm at. I'm a VR fan. I enjoy VR. I'm an Apple fan. You know, even with ups and downs, you know, in their hardware, like, I have kind of stuck with them. I'm recording right now in an Apple studio. I'm not averse to paying on a Mac studio. I'm not averse to paying money for Apple technology. I would have paid up to $1,500 to have this if it was like the super best, like, here you go. Like, this is, you know, AR, VR. That would have been there. When I saw that, I was like, fucking no.
Yeah.
Like, I probably have the money for it, but like, I don't know, man. Like, 1/5 of a used Toyota Camry? Fuck you.
I have money. I also have dignity. Yeah. So
the only angle I could see on this is out where I was in Silicon Valley, which do not recommend. there were a whole bunch of startups that were like applying AR and stuff like that to super specialized like industries, like I don't know, like heavy shipping or like, you know, light rail, you know, just things mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah,
that's the only scenario I could see this working is if there's a thing where like a corporation, you know, needed one to like, I don't know, operate their hover factory machines or something.
Where even something this shockingly expensive to a regular person is much cheaper than risking a newbie training on actual real live hard equipment with really expensive product or machinery.
Right. The question for me, though, is like Apple isn't a primarily B2B company.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like their long-term game plan would have to be that this is, you know, going to get economies of scale and then the price can go down. But man, I don't know.
I don't know. Like, you can't get over that first impression. Well, yeah. You can, but no. It takes a very long time and a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the immediate question that came to my mind, is like, who is this for? And David, yeah, I think you nailed it. It is all the people with a corporate credit card that are scrambling to appear hip and innovative.
Yeah. The appeal to gamers makes a certain amount of sense given VR's place in gaming primarily. Like you can, kind of demonstrate a lot of the capabilities of this kind of system by showing No Man's Sky in it, mm-hmm. which, you know, is hot. Yeah. You know, but also I can play No Man's Sky on at least 3 VR headsets that I have in my house right now.
Exactly. Oh, well, that's the other news that wasn't in this article is the headset, Apple's headset, will support about 100 different games from Apple Arcade at launch.
That's sweet.
Which boils down to, you know, $35 per Apple Arcade game if you play them all.
Yeah.
Can you play Half-Life Alyx on it?
That is a huge question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, because like that new, like the new meta that they like the new quest that they just announced that's coming out this fall for $500, which is like a day one purchase kind of thing. Like mm-hmm. that also is an AR headset. Fuck me for saying anything positive about that company, but like I can play Alyx on that by connecting mm-hmm. it to my Steam computer mm-hmm. wirelessly. Right.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep. I mean, there's better options out there for anyone who isn't completely sold on Apple. But again, judging by the crowd reaction, not even the people that have completely sold out to Apple are into this. And someone on Twitter pointed out their reaction sounds identical to the crowd groan from Wii Sports when you like accidentally throw the bowling ball backwards.
I lost my breath laughing when I saw that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, watch the side by side. It is uncanny.
See, it reminded me of when people do, I don't know if they're real, but like the reaction shots of people watching M. Night Shyamalan trailers where mm-hmm. it gets to the end and says directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, God. It's a man. It's kind of like having a friend. You know, you have a friend who makes really, really bad decisions. I'm not talking about any of you, but just in general, like, I don't know if it's with substances or whatever, but it's, you know, like you go over to their house and then you you see them pull out the bottle and it's like,
bud,
it's like, I thought we were past this. I thought we were past this, Apple. Come on.
Yeah. I really want AR to work though, because gosh, dang it. I've already got all the bad parts of living in a cyberpunk dystopia. You owe me some of the tech.
Give me at least 1% of the upside, please.
Yeah, it's the you know, humans are doing the cheap labor while the robots are creating art and writing.
Never thought about it like that. Fuck.
Yeah, no, it's, man, I don't know. I was about to say something really bleak.
I told you we'd get there.
Oh my God. Ben, how was I wrong last week?
Wait, my story is about me being right. I don't think you were wrong. Were you wrong? I don't know.
Go ahead and tell the story and I'll say how I was wrong.
All right. So this story is about this is like Ben's Schadenfreude corner where I'm going to talk shit about Konami some more. So it came out in the past week, a detail about the remake they're doing for the Metal Gear 3. Because there are questions around if they were bringing back voice actors to re-record things because they said something kind of ambiguous. And they clarified, mm-hmm. no, we're not going to do that. To get the game out sooner to the fans, we're just going to reuse that audio we already got. We're not going to pay new people.
Holy shit.
My prediction from last week is going in the right direction. They're going to quickly make a shitty remake and try and get some money out of it. And womp womp.
What I said last week was that they were bringing back the original voice cast, mm-hmm. Many of whom I learned are dead. I mean,
technically they are.
Many of whom I have learned in the meantime are dead, actually. But I spoke about that as a point in its favor. Like, okay, they're going to honor this thing. They're going to, bring back David Hayter. They're going to bring back, all these people who made those performances what they were. No, they're going to just reuse the original recordings, which were fine, but also this precludes an awful lot of new content and spins on content and like the thing that is exactly. in vogue with remakes right now, which is recontextualizing the original.
Yeah.
Based on kind of current times and mechanics and stuff.
Yeah. And this is like such a terrible sign because now it's like, no, this game is going to be exactly the same as the original one. And so it's like, okay, so like what happens if there's something going on narratively that's hard to do in like a new engine that you have? Like what's mm-hmm. gonna, I don't know. So I'm in before shit ton of bugs, whatever.
In before the apology note.
Yeah.
Mine.
They're gonna start demoing the apology note instead of gameplay.
Go ahead.
We don't have anything ready to show you yet, but here is what we think the content of our apology note will be.
So is Konami doing anything good right now?
You can replace now with like last 10 years and
the thing that Konami is doing good right now is outsourcing Silent Hill stuff to other studios and other writers, mm-hmm. even if some of the people that they're giving it to are not the best folks.
Ooh, that makes sense. Do you mean by that?
Oh, just in terms of giving the Silent Hill 2 the Silent Hill 2 remake to Bloober Team. And that the Silent Hill Descent thing doesn't look too great, but I'm withholding judgment.
Okay.
Beyond that, I would say like having the wisdom to defer to outside studios for these things is probably for the better for them.
Yeah.
But that's it. And it's arguable how much that is Konami doing a good thing.
Yeah.
they just don't have enough capacity to do it bad.
Yeah. Because they fucking gutted everything for investors, It's a nightmare. Everything is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, but it's not Silent Hill. It's the real world. That's what's weird about it.
Yeah, I know, right? So, I'm disappointed, but I don't know. We'll see.
I'm weirdly, happy and sad about it because I'm like, fucking knew it. But then also, damn.
Can we have Ben's Schadenfreude Corner as a official segment, please?
it's so rare for him because usually he's... I mean, I'm not positive, but like good natured, right? But like you've earned the right to be skeptical for about this company.
One. Yes.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah. Oh, hey, David, what's BattleTech doing right?
Sorry, I'm thinking how to frame this. So basically, for Pride Month, a bunch of, queer writers put together a zine of BattleTech short stories, which is really cool. However, when people posted about it on the BattleTech Reddit, the moderators removed the post because you're not allowed posting anything political, which is a problem. However, it turned out it is a problem, but it was a problem for the moderators because
that's a good clarification. I said what BattleTech is doing right. I should have said what the BattleTech community is doing right. This is a positive story, but not from the company.
Well, no, we get to the company actually.
Okay, cool.
So it turned out to be a problem for the moderators because the person that created the Reddit like 15 years ago decided, all right, I'm just going to fire all the moderators. And so just kicked them all out. And then on the BattleTech company side, they don't go into a lot of details of this, but apparently, like, they just have gotten their, like, I don't know what the term is, but basically they're like social media liaison type thing up and running. And the person in charge of it was like moving over the weekend when this happened. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh crap, like this is kind of fucked up. And so their like approach was they created a new BattleTech subreddit that, you know, wasn't wasn't cool with hating people. And so now the old BattleTech subreddit and the new BattleTech subreddit are basically in talks to be like, all right, you're cool and we're cool, so we're gonna like figure out how we're gonna work together and like be cool.
Nice.
Also, I posted a link to the Zine. It looks pretty cool. I love the cover. Has a mech warrior, you know, painted up shark style as they do with the text "trans rights or I bites."
it is like a trans flag shark style.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. It reminds me of the IKEA shark that kind of became the thing.
That is such a weird phenomenon, and I'm here for it. Yeah.
So yeah. So, you know, the community ended up being super cool, and there's a bunch of free short stories to read.
Nice. Yeah. I'm just imagining some chud saying, hey, your LGBT agenda has nothing to do with my mecha anime stuff. And it's like, bitch, Kaworu Nagisa, Shinji, Evangelion, come on, you assholes.
Yeah.
Should maybe make a small PSA where next week is don't get on Reddit for the from the 12th to the 14th for the API pricing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it's cool. All over all my subreddits. Explain
that for everybody.
So Reddit changed things so that they added API pricing, and they changed the API pricing. And basically they're doing it as a way to like block out third party apps. And it's a way.
This is the thing that the Apollo devs posted about.
And I think I use Reddit as fun as like the phone app I use. And so basically it makes it prohibitively expensive. It's like in the millions of months to run those apps now if they do that new API pricing. And it's much higher.
Killing the golden goose.
And so anyway, so there's like a bunch of different subreddits, like even like Seattle subreddit and stuff like that. They're all protesting from the 12th to the 14th, which will be after when this releases, but before when the next one does. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's good to know. Thanks.
Don't cross the picket line. Yeah.
I will be not doing the play by comment that. That time.
Cool. Slay
the
Spire. Nice.
And people are like, what am I going to do? Play the game myself?
Probably.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Nice. And my story, this is just a real quick one. One of my favorite horror games, Lisa the Painful, and its expansion, Lisa the Joyful. These formerly RPG Maker RPGs that deal with a lot of body horror and just kind of societal horror kind of stuff, kind of styles itself after Earthbound kind of things. Both of those games are getting an HD re-release. It is very funny to talk about this game getting 4K and 12.8 or 120 hertz kind of stuff, because it is pixel art or what have you.
You can really see the seams between the pixels.
You can. Stitching is amazing. You can get in there. I think the bigger news for this is the fact that it is coming to consoles. It's coming to PS5, at the very least, and Nintendo Switch, which I think is the bigger deal here, Xbox and such, and also on PC. You're getting both of the games, like, where you get in the game and the expansion pack in the same thing together here. So you can play one of the most unsettling and upsetting games that I've ever played on July the 18th, all together for one particular price point. And anybody who has listened to the show knows that I think it is good when good games are able to be played by more people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody remember these games? Anybody tried these?
I have not. I'm looking at the very least the fan art for them is on point.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It is so bleak. Yeah. There's a drug that mutates people. And it is wonderful, by which I mean nightmare inducing. So yeah, cool. That's my story. Nothing there other than that. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let's button this.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 461. We really, really appreciate it. Little programming note, we are not going to be back next week because I'm going to be out of town. So we appreciate your patience as that goes. Should be back the next week, assuming that I don't get sick or whatever from traveling.
Or get struck by the Kia boys.
Yeah. Oh, the Kia boys.
They found me on the West Coast.
Did I tell you guys got my car back? That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
And Sam's license plate, though.
Okay, cool. So you have the most recent update. Yeah. So I've got to drive to the Columbus, Ohio airport. God, nobody who listens, nobody steal my car, please. I bought a club, like a steering wheel lock thing. Fucking Kia, man. I called my dealership and asked, like, hey, my Kia got stolen. I got it back. Are you giving away like wheel locks? And they said, giving away? No, we're not going to give anything away. They talked to me like I was an asshole.
Wow.
And so I went and bought like a $20 one. So nobody try to steal my car. It's not going to drive. You're not going to be able to turn the wheel enough to get out of the parking spot. Yeah.
You make it sound like that would stop the Kia boys. Maybe they just go in a straight line like a paladin.
The world's shortest joyride.
God, that was such a great scene in the D&D movie.
Yeah, I know. Ben.
Just walking right over the rocks. That was improvised. You know that, right?
I did not know that.
No way.
That's awesome.
That was improvised. That actor decided, I'm just going for it. And they made it into a joke in ADR. It was so good. If you want to support this show and this network, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can leave a rating or review for the show in iTunes or whatever podcast directory that you like to use that happens to support those things. Tell your friends to join us to hear about new games and games that we are currently finding interesting. And come back next week. All of those are good things.
Come back in 2 weeks.
Not next week. Yeah. Yes, 2 weeks.
Yes. Well, you can listen to another episode next week. It just won't be new.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis, anything going on?
Why are there 50,000 downloads of this first episode of the show?
That's wild. Dennis, anything happening with your games and stuff?
Cons are happening. So I will be at Origins. I will be at Gen Con. More details soon. Of note, I think I might have said this on a previous show, the signature edition of the game is completely sold out except for the stock that I'm bringing to cons. So yeah, it's not a lot. And that is the last place you will be able to get it before, I don't know, potentially if there's like a reprint in the future. Mm-hmm. Wink. come see me if you're at those things.
Nice. Keep an eye out. Dennis is a very nice man. Yeah. Anything else I'm forgetting?
Mm-mm.
All right. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams, not this weekend, but the next one at duckfeed.tv on Twitch.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at Origins and Gen Con.
I'm David Mysmith. You can't find me on Reddit.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I've got one, and I imagine this is going to be hard to beat. Your various anime straps.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So I had three. I had Goblin Mode Link. I had NASCAR ? And okay. I had Ben Schottenfreud Corner.
All right.
Which needs to be a reoccurring segment.
Oh, I don't want to corrupt Ben with negativity.
But it's Freud, it's happiness, right? Mm-hmm. What could be so bad about that?
But it's a shameful joy, Ben.
Don't you want me to be happy, Cole?
I do. It's just not in that way.
Oh wow. I just had a Vision Pro ad pop up. They are actually advertising it.
Holy shit. Hey, just in case you have $3,500 waiting around in your couch cushions, I guess. Because we're not out of touch, I swear.
Yeah.
Ben, what you got?
On that note, go ahead, Dennis.
What you got?
I had a title that I liked very much. I don't think it beats yours, Cole, but I had The Apple Vision Pro, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. So I had that. I had Bentiment. Mm-hmm. And Long Live the Deckard. And then from very early on in the episode, I had, sorry guys, I hired a vet.
I was, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I was really proud of that joke.
It's pretty good.
I was at a family thing, and I've got a family member who works at a bourbon bar, and they were holding court about, you know, like Tennessee whiskey versus whatever, and they said, well, technically it's not bourbon if, and then just immediately, like firing from the hip, I said, if it's not from the Champagne region of France. And nobody laughed. And she looked at me like I was a fucking asshole. And I looked at my mom and I said, that is a very funny joke. And I need you to know that.
Everybody laughed. Kind of joke now.
You're going to be falling asleep 5 years from now and think of that and just start giggling.
This one's a thinker. Okay. What was the last one, Dennis? I'm sorry, guys. I
hired a vet.
Okay. All right. What you got, Ben?
I just got one. It's someone's going to crash and burn, but I'm down with the straps. I'm
down with the straps as well. Is there any violent opposition to the straps?
Just passive. Just passive opposition.
Well, that's no
whatever
fun.
Whatever ripped them off in the first place.
Yep.
Cool. Okay, that works for me. So it is decided.